Hey, baby.
Hey.
Naomi and Andy here with a quick Q/request.
Yes. So, okay, Acast is doing these audience surveys, okay? We put the link in the show notes. The link is going to be in the link tree on our Instagram and everything like that. Here's the thing, Naomi. You know, we're already pretty choosy about the ads that we allow on the show. No weapons manufacturers.
Raytheon, get out of here.
Yeah. Screw off, Raytheon. But we want to make sure that the ads are kind of tailored to y'all.
Right.
Okay? Right? Say you want to hear ads for A Different World DVD box sets.
We need to know that.
We need
can
to
go
know
out
that.
To them. We can get the word out. But we only can get the word out if you give us the word. So you got to fill out the survey. It is quick, quick, quick. And it just lets us know if the ads you're hearing are the right ads for you.
Yeah.
So get on over to the show notes where that link is or the Couples Therapy link tree and fill out that quick survey so we can pass the word on to Acast.
All right. Roll it.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Open your hearts, loosen your butts. It's time for Couples Therapy.
Yeah. This podcast is Andy and Naomi's, where they can both laugh and hang with all their homies, talking excellent vacationing with brunches and cuddling, to messy situationships and conscious and coupling, from Netflix hookups to single them with some Hulu, text, sex, regrets, or feeling on your new Jubu. They gon' talk about it, yeah, you are invited, needing therapy, I guarantee, baby, we got it.
It's Couples Therapy, Couples Therapy.
Everyone, and welcome to Couples Therapy. My name is Andy.
And I am Naomi.
We are a real life couple.
A real life couple of comedians.
And on Couples Therapy,
in quarantine,
we and our guest answer a couple of advice questions from a couple different listeners.
As always, shout out to Leah for giving us that opening. We're still trying it. You know what I mean? We got to just feel how it sounds in our mouths a couple times.
Again, I'm feeling like comedy bang bang. Send them. Maybe we'll just rotate out. New ones.
Yes, 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 yes. Go through the rotation. So if you guys have more ideas for how we should intro the show, as always, hit us up. DM your girl. Email your boy. Okay.
Oh, how is everyone? Welcome to October. Yes, woo! I am the official, by the way. I am the official welcomer of October.
Oktoberfest. The spookiest.
By the way,
spookiest
folks, we are recording this intro. It is 98 degrees here in Los Angeles, and this is like the fifth thing we've taped today.
Oh my God, can you imagine?
My brain is fucking shot. So how about, Naomi?
What?
How about we just dispense with the intro, move through it very quickly.
So we can get to the good stuff? I mean, yeah, always feel that way. Hello, you've already heard the dulcet tones of our guests. Today we are talking to comedian and kind soul Gary Gulman. You know Gary Gulman, I don't know, from everywhere. He is one of the few comics who has been on every single late night comedy show. Every late night show during comedy.
Mm-hmm. Including Carson Daly?
Probably. I don't know. I'm assuming Yasin Gull, okay? He's also in Two Dope Queens, which is where we met for the first time. And also, I don't know about you, but I loved his latest special, The Great Depression, which came out last year on Habbo.
It's really great. I remember you and I sat and watched it together.
And I was like, oh, Gare.
And that's where we found out, you know, we learned that there's a lot more to Gary than we knew.
Well, I mean, he's an open soul. He has a beautiful King Charles Spaniel. He has a beautiful black wife. You know what I mean? Like, he's giving me everything. Mm-hmm. He's really bringing to us the best of the best.
I wrote down here, Gary's a real one.
I love that.
In my notes for the intro, I'm like, Gary's a real one.
Credits include being a real one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, which I think is honestly should be a credit. If someone's a real one, you need to say that shit up top.
Yeah, there's so many sociopaths out there. You gotta
highlight the real ones.
That should be like, the sociopaths are like, I was on Leno and I did a Comedy Central set. What was the old Comedy Central show that everyone like from 1990 to
Premium
90?
Blend?
Yeah, Premium Blend. Mm-hmm. I got a Premium Blend set.
Yeah.
But if you're also a good human, it says, you know, I did a Premium Blend set and I'm a moral human.
And I'm a real one.
And I'm a moral human.
Moral human isn't as fun as real one.
It's not as fun.
I'm just saying.
I would say it's quite descriptive, Naomi. Hey, but yes, like I said, let's get into the episode. Before we get there, though, a couple of...
you're blue-balling them. You're like, well, let's get to it. But before we get to it...
Hey, Naomi, one thing I'm into is podcast edging.
You love to edge on the pod, baby. You love to edge.
So a couple of housekeeping things. Every Wednesday, we do our Twitch show.
Yes.
Where we are, it's just me and Naomi mostly. Sometimes we have guests, but, you know, we're doing bits. Naomi does her famous segment, Naomi Hates.
Famous in that all the people who watch the Twitch like it. Honestly, you should join us. We're called the Couples Therapy Quarantine Crew. We're now calling it just group. So what I'm saying is it's a safe space. It's a community. It's friends. It's a beautiful 60 minutes where you can just unwind, unplug, have fun. Well, I guess you're plugged in. Your laptop should be plugged in.
Right.
Visit us at twitch.tv/couplestherapypod
yeah.
so you can check out the show.
And actually, we'll be doing a very special one on Election Day.
Yes.
Liz Winstead is doing this whole day
Liz
of
Winstead,
programming.
Co-creator of The Daily Show, the founder of Abortion Access Front, very politically active, very funny woman, and she is putting together 12 hours of comedy.
Yeah, on Election Day. She says it's to keep people entertained while they're in line to vote. I say it's to keep your mind off the anxiety.
While you're waiting for those
answers.
Yeah, the point is we're going to be doing that up, you guys.
So once we have a link, we will...
Yeah, but we'll be on around 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. Yeah. Obviously, we'll let you know if that changes, but it'll be a fun hour, you know, so come hang out with us.
Yeah, so pencil that into your diaries, folks.
Yeah.
Finally, in quarantine, as you know, we are doing advice episodes every week. So if you would like to call in... Mm-hmm. Obviously, we take DMs, but if you would like to call in
is the best, and you can hear it.
Yes. Please call 323-524-7839 and leave a voicemail there. We can't wait to hear from you.
That's true. We can't.
So, enough.
Edging. Enough
this.
Edging. Let's get
to
the show.
But before we...
Oh, baby, say it.
Roll it. Gary.
Yeah.
Gary.
Gary Goldman, baby. The real GG in the house.
We have so much to talk to you about.
So much to unpack. This is a real dream come true.
Of course, dogs. Well, here's the thing. I'm going to apologize right away if I am sluggish, if I am aphasic with my vocabulary, because Mabel, our sweet dog, woke me up at like 5 in the morning because she needed to go to the bathroom. And so I shuffled out into the East Hollywood / Los Feliz haze.
Sketchy night.
The haze of dawn. And then was in and out of sleep on the couch ever since. So apologies. But you also have a dog.
Oh, no. Yes, no apologies. And there's something to be grateful for there that you... We're woken up by Mabel that she's a cooperative dog. So you should be grateful for that and that you had to nap various times. I think now you know what it's like to be a dog, where they are constantly seem to be catching back up on sleep.
Yes,
I thought you were going to say parent.
No, a dog.
Yeah, that is like being a parent, though. Yeah, That's always my concern with parenting, is just I could see myself with the baby, just resisting the baby's need for nurturing and and completely dropping the ball within the first weeks of its life, and then it just I create a serial killer because
Yeah, that's why I think I would. I know I shouldn't have children because like I resent when people need me. You know what I mean? So it's like I should never make a human, and I know that, and everyone is welcome. You know,
including me.
What do you mean?
Do you resent me if I need you?
Not really, no. But I will also say you're a very self-sufficient person, right? Like there's maybe a reason because like you very rarely need something, and I'm like, cool. He's good. Great.
That was actually something just in our last couple's therapy where you were like, you have to rely on me more.
I know that's true. It's getting a little overboard. Do you go to couples therapy? Do you and your wife, you go to couples therapy at all?
We went years ago a few times, and then my depression took over the entire mental health aspect of our relationship. So it she would come with me to all my psychiatry appointments.
Yeah.
But it was mostly she was like this great advocate / research assistant who would do all kinds of research to ask the doctor about it when we got there, and then sometimes she would go off on her own and do experiments and projects. Like she grew mushrooms in our apartment because she had read this article, and it's actually a very promising treatment.
Really?
Microdosing with those psilocybin mushrooms. Mm-hmm. But she grew them in our apartment, and she nailed it. I mean, I think she freeze dried them or something like that, or packed them in something. So we still have them. I was never comfortable taking them because I was always concerned. I don't know if you guys are Pink Floyd fans at all, but I was always concerned that I would become the founding member of Pink Floyd.
Mm-hmm.
Lost his mind on LSD and not mushrooms, but he was also mentally ill to begin with, and then that always scared me that there
me
would be a
too.
point of no return.
I'm always like I used to say my brain is like Harlem in the 80s. You don't want to go there alone, you know? And so the idea of taking something that, I'm like, it would rip me open and it would be like, no, putting that shit back together. I never did drugs for that reason.
Right. It's such a great point because you hear these. I've only heard one horror story like that, and it's plenty. It's plenty.
Right.
And this was a guy who was much smarter than me. So I didn't want to take that chance, but I was so appreciative of her proactiveness regarding the treatment. Yeah,
you didn't want the drugs to gentrify your brain. Is that
exactly
it?
Exactly. That's
yeah.
That's it.
The man's name was Sid Barrett, and I always think about him and like a lot of Pink Floyd's later music was sort of inspired by his their relationship with him and his story, and it just is very very interesting. But it's definitely the most what do you call it the I'm looking for a word better than biggest, but sort of the ideal the ideal cautionary tale.
Yes
archetype. Hey, my brain, you know what, honestly I had a Diet Coke. And my brain is like moving. The caffeine from the Diet Coke is really. It's the Sid Barrett. I'm not a big Pink Floyd fan, but I love Sid Barrett's solo album.
Okay, I'm not that familiar with Sid Barrett solo, but I do know that he was the heart and soul of the band, and to hear the interviews with the remaining members of the band talk about losing him, and because I have a friend from high school that really suffers from mental illness, and he's never been the same, and it's really really heartbreaking.
Yeah.
I mean it's difficult. I think there's also this kind of thing where like you like I think about when I was a kid, it was Kurt Cobain who, you know, that was like my version of Syd Barrett, right? Mm-hmm. Who's like someone who was like mentally ill a little bit and is like self-medicating, mm-hmm. and then that leads to their death.
Yeah.
And then there's this kind of like, I identify with the person. There's also this kind of like, oh, all the music that could have been. Also, who knows, if Nirvana had stayed around, it could have been like, you know, they're just making corporate, you know, Halliburton sponsored. Halliburton sponsored Nirvana for their like 13th album.
Right.
So.
Oh my God.
Not that I'm saying, I would rather have him alive.
Of course. And, making, and Halliburton.
Yes.
Alive and Halliburton.
And making the worst music for Citibank or something.
Right. Wait, Gary, do you feel like you are like, now the depression guy, meaning people talk to you about it, not like people thinking, people like, it's like we would have a conversation and immediately be like, okay, Gary, so I don't know about my Wellbutrin and my Lexapro combination. Like, is that what happens now?
Yes, and I'll tell you, I am not bothered by it. Like a lot of things in my life, the whether it be the amount of times I get recognized, or the size of the venues I perform at, I've reached kind of a Goldilocks position where it's just right. If I was being approached more often, I'd be irritated, and if I was being approached less often, I would feel like a colossal failure and a nobody. So it happens every once in a while, and the size of the shows are just right. There are some places where I sell 1,000. I can always sell a few hundred, and that is ideal for me to. I think it keeps me honest because we all know the comedians who stopped improving once they got famous, and I mean, listen, it's a fair trade-off, but at the same time, I really think that you lose something when you have an audience that is just so thrilled to be there and is cheering, and you don't get a fair gauge. And also, it's not so much that, it's that even there's no place where you're getting an honest reaction because you're famous. Even at the bar shows and at the Comedy Cellar. So usually when I go with the Comedy Cellar, maybe two or three people have seen me. But if you're one of these super famous people, everybody has seen you. They're hyped to listen to you. They're hanging on every word. They know your background. It's just, it's really hard to stay at the top of your creative abilities with fame. And it sounds like sour grapes. And I would say the sour grapes is only 30% of it. I 70% believe that it's necessary to be a little bit unknown to keep improving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think about that Sinbad quote all the time, where it's as a paraphrase, but it's basically like you're no longer, when stand up stops riding the bus, they're no longer funny, right?
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, I love that.
That's so true because I always remembered before I was even a comedian, I was just a fan. I would see certain comedians would talk about their meetings with super famous people, sometimes the president, and I would say to myself, "Oh, they're finished with us. They're no longer writing for us." And that type of name dropping never really moved me. I really wanted to hear how they interpreted the life that was happening to me.
I think there's something that both you, Gary, and you, Naomi, have in common that keeps you grounded, that keeps you in touch with real life, is that you both struggle with depression. And I think that allows you to, you're not, at every level, no matter if you are meeting Obama or not,
right,
you still are in touch with real life in some way.
Through the dark lens. I can always see it through the dark lens.
that is so interesting. I'm glad you brought that up because I thought about it a lot and nobody has ever brought it up. But that's so interesting because I always think of how humbling it is and how you feel like you're walking this tightrope of sanity. And I always say I can see madness in my periphery at all times, and I keep it at bay. I have a lot of I have better coping mechanisms than I've ever had in my life, and yet I know that there's you, don't get cocky, kid. That's what I always think to myself with these situations is yes, everything is going fine, but you need to be vigilant, and also it's important to be compassionate, because as we become more wise, I guess, in the human condition, we realize that a lot of the people who are mistreating us or are abrupt or just assholes that we know they're suffering in some way a lot of the times, and so it's easier to have compassion and give grace, and it's not a gift, but there are ways to interpret some of the aspects of it as positives or lessons, and I just wish everyone could experience it for 72 hours or whatever it is, not knowing that they're going to come out of it, and I think they would be more understanding, and they would be less likely to say snap out of it or what do you have to be depressed about. I mean that
have you been talking to my mother? Gary, right? You've got to stop talking to my mother about what you have to be depressed about.
We've come a long way with regards to that, and more successful people are opening up about their struggles and making people understand that it's not about achievement. I know that one of the biggest moments for me in my recovery was reading Bruce Springsteen's autobiography, and he talked about his own depression. And if there was anyone who I would have said, well, nobody outworks him, nobody is more successful, he would not be depressed. He could feel satisfied in that he worked hard and he achieved. And we know now that achievement, working hard, I used to tell myself all the time, you feel lousy about yourself because you're not working hard enough and you haven't achieved enough. And when you keep, and then when you work harder and achieve, then you'll feel good about yourself. And then you keep moving the finish line.
Right. But how do you reconcile sort of the business we're in with wanting to be mentally healthy? Because I find them to be at odds. Because if so
there,
much
there
of
are a number of things
mental
that are,
health
that are at odds. It's the business aspect is at odds, because we're even when we're not auditioning, we're auditioning. We're under judgment and criticism, which are antithetical to our mental health. But when I was an accountant, I couldn't reconcile that profession and that environment with being alive. I just couldn't. I couldn't figure out how I was contributing. How I was, other than I'm putting food on the table, and which aren't great motivators. And so we have this thing where we can say I'm expressing myself. I'm relieving people of their burdens. I'm lessening their aloneness, and I'm lightening their day. So we have all that. If you can separate that from the competitiveness and the insecurity, especially early on, the financial insecurity, but then you can find that why for the jobs. I was able to find the why for all the jobs that I had in the interim, because I had to get, from the time I was about 25 to the time I was 30, I had to get jobs to support my comedy, and then that weren't related to comedy, Starbucks and substitute teaching. Then I got a job I wrote a pilot, so that was a little bit more adjacent to stand-up comedy, and then I've been able to support myself with comedy since about 2003, just through stand-up. So the reconciling, you're never going to be able to reconcile all the competitiveness and the criticism and the backbiting and all the all the envy and comparing and all that. I mean, that's I guess helpful to have a good therapist and to read a lot. But I think I could always reconcile the portion of the sort of the artist component of the business where I was a magnet for stories that involved people saying, forget about everything but the jokes. I remember hearing stories about it was always attributed to either Jay Leno or Jerry Seinfeld, who are very strange characters and eccentric and have weird attitudes towards the business and everything like that. But they
what, just because they want, each own 300 cars,
right? I don't get that, and I could go into numerous stories, but about their drive is just, it's maniacal. And so one of them said this and it became kind of a mantra for me. Don't worry about managers, agents, deals, appearances on television. Ask yourself, am I getting funnier? And if I get an answer yes to that, then I'm moving forward. And I wasn't always able to distill it to that, but for the most part, I was able to keep that on my mind. And when I started comparing myself to other people, I realized I was straying from that, because you should really only be comparing yourself to yourself and where you were 6 months ago.
Did you hear that, Naomi?
I am, yep, get all the animal hair off my face. But I will tell you that the thing is, I feel like I've gotten worse at stand-up, obviously because I don't do it in choir, but also just moving to L.A. Because what you were just saying before about Sinbad and taking the bus, there is no equivalent of taking the bus here. I'm in a car, and then I go to do something businessy. All the friends I have are in this industry in some capacity, and I don't really engage with anything that's not that. And I think that's ruined me. What? I got one good bit about walking the dog. Who cares? It's like, oh, what have I gotten to show myself? Like, moving here, it has not been the stand-up that has improved. It's been, like, the other, like, you know, making money, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we're living, and it's not in an office, but stand-up, I don't know. I get real worried about that. I'm like, fuck, what if my best year was 2016? And it's all downhill from 2016. I'm too young for that.
No, I think that my view on Los Angeles was that it was a mixed bag, in that I couldn't get on stage. If I really hustled, I would get on stage maybe three or four times a week at bars and things like that. I used to say I will get on the Laugh Factory marquee when I die. It'll say, R.I.P. Gary Goldman, make God laugh. And
then
I used to drive I used to drive by that place and scream, fuck you, Laugh Factory. They would just never give me spots. And so I couldn't get on stage, but I got into a really good acting program, so I was there three or four nights a week, and then you have that after acting class hang, which was so great. And they were really, really, they were actors. They weren't people trying to be famous. They were actors, and they had studied theater in college. It was wonderful. It was my saving grace. And so I don't feel like I got much better at stand up. I used to go to New York once a month for the weekend and get on stage a whole bunch, and that was really helpful. So I got better at stand up during that time, but it wasn't because of Los Angeles. But I will say that the idea of only doing stand-up to improve your stand-up, I think that's a myth. I think all kinds of different things, whether it be writing on something or writing something for yourself, writing a book or spending a lot of time in acting class or reading, I think there are so many different things that you can do to improve stand-up besides getting on stage. And then there will be times in your career when all you're doing is stand up and all you have time for is stand up, and you will grow then. I think that the I know what you're thinking. I'm a stand up, I should be on stage every single night, and I think that there will be years where you are on stage every night, and in the meantime do as many different things as you have time and energy for.
Preach, Gary. Preach.
Preach, Queen. Preach.
Yeah. I think Naomi needs because to hear these things.
Yeah, LA was not a total loss, and I'm sure I was getting on less than you. And the relationships. The say what you will about the LA comedy scene. Some of the best people I've ever become friends with are there, and I'm so glad that I was there for 6 years, and I probably only got on stage twice, but I made so many good friends that have made me a better human and a better stand up in the long run. So I wouldn't give much thought to how you should be on like, stage more. Yeah.
Like Jay Leno.
Yep, his dear friend Jay Leno.
Denim King. Denim King Jay Leno.
Denim King.
Wait, Gary. So we're going to answer a couple questions from our listeners.
Okay.
But to get into the spirit, you know, I think, you know, there is some kind of a consonance here between us.
Of course.
A Jewish man in an interracial relationship.
They're the hot version of us. Yeah. Okay, Gary and Sade are the hot version of us.
Oh,
I'm into
stop.
It. I was like, tell
stop.
Me everything about the love.
I am curious. Yes, every aspect of your relationship. Spill the beans.
Spill the
we
tea.
We want to know.
How long have you been together?
Well, we started dating, I think, we went on a few dates a couple years before we became a couple in 2015. We became a couple on like, we're not gonna see anybody else, on July 4th, 2015.
Okay.
When I told her I loved her on a roof, and
romantic 4th of July love.
Yes, yes. And so, but before that we would hang out frequently, and I would always go and talk with her on Friday nights at the Comedy Cellar. Her best friend was a hostess, and that's how we became friends, because she would visit her friend and then I would talk to her, and then I asked her on a date, and so we would go back and forth, but it didn't become serious in 2015. So there were a couple of years where we were friends who would sometimes go on dates.
Friends who would sometimes go on dates.
Yeah.
What does that exactly mean?
How did it go the other... Yeah, like, how did it kind of tip?
Like, just every once in a while, you just ask her out?
No, I guess they... I don't know if... We weren't, like hookup buddies. We weren't like that. But we would see each other, and I think that I thought that she really wasn't that crazy about me. And so I didn't go all in, and I didn't really put myself out there. So I think she had kind of a stubborn attitude that way too. So
yeah. So she seems mellow. Like I because you and I met you for the first time at Two Dope Queens, even though, you know, I knew who you
yeah.
were. But Sade is also like very chill. Like she's kind of, at least, you know, with strangers maybe, like a more just soft spoken kind of mellow person. That I could imagine yeah. that before you know her really well, you're like, I don't know, it could go
yeah,
either way here.
Oh, she's an introvert, a proud introvert.
Yeah.
So it takes a while to bring her out, but still waters run deep, and the more I've gotten to know her, I'm shocked at it always surprises me when somebody so smart is insecure and that you wouldn't know these certain things, or they're incredibly humble or self-effacing, and I find, like, she went to the theater program at NYU, and these are things that I would tell you within the first few sentences of meeting you if it was me.
Yeah.
And it really didn't come out until we had been hanging out for months. So she's just a really humble person and very, very quiet, and it takes, I don't want to say imagination, but you would have to be very secure in yourself to not think that she was giving you a brush off if you were trying to date her. Yeah.
So what about you? I mean, come on, we're both sad sacks looking for love.
Yeah.
How were you able to push through? And because I know me, I need a lot of positive reinforcement even 10 years in. Like, I will literally be like, Andy, are you leaving? Like, I'll just ask. Like, I'm not even worried. I just, like, ask. Every now and then I'm like, you thinking about it? You know? And he's like, no. So I can't imagine in the early days.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because it's true. But I think I for some reason, am drawn, and it's a sad thing probably, I'm drawn to people who are hard to get and are giving me very little to go on, and so I really pulled out all the stops to win her over, and once I did, oh my gosh, I remember that feeling of because she, it's not manipulative or anything like that. She just wasn't somebody who came right out and made it obvious that she was in love with me. And once I found out that she was, it was exhilarating.
Well, what was it about July 4th, 2015, rooftop fireworks, star-spangled love? What was it about that moment?
I think that she had started to call me in her text. She had started to call me Boo, and I'd never been called that by anybody, and I was like, oh, she likes me. It was like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. She likes me. And so that night, after all these time of, I mean, I also knew that I didn't want to scare her away, so I'd kept a lot of my feelings to myself. And then that night, mm-hmm. I was convinced that she liked me, and it was very romantic, and we had spent the whole day together, and probably the previous day, and so I felt emboldened to to profess my love to her, and so that was. That was really special, and it was earned, because it was a long time into our courtship.
I love it. That's tender. That's romantic and tender.
Well, it's very much. I get where you're coming from. I know that, like, in this analogy, you guys are the same, are more similar. But I'm
sort
saying,
of, yeah,
I get
yeah.
that, where it's just like, it's so scary that you're like, I need some kind of breadcrumb that the other person feels the same way.
Yeah.
Otherwise, if I can't put myself, I can't totally put myself out there unless I have some notion, some
right.
boo in my text.
Boo in my text. That is the sign.
Yeah.
And y'all got married, right?
Yes and no.
Oh, okay. I don't know. Because you sometimes say my wife, so I didn't know if it was like, you know, but.
Yeah, I always say my wife.
Oh, okay.
Since I shot that special, because we had plans to get engaged before the special, and then we couldn't get the ring right away, and then we had another plan to get married that was scuttled by the COVID, and so we have an appointment an appointment, an online appointment for October 5th to get a marriage license.
Nice.
Yeah.
And then I think we can go from there, figure out what we have to do. But it's been rather frustrating. And initially I thought that we would be married by the time the special aired. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to say my wife during this special. And the other thing was, and it's just a matter of my own taste, is that I thought referring to her as my girlfriend in the special was somehow discounting the role she played in my recovery,
right.
which I think was the most valuable role. I really think that she was really the MVP of my
of course she was making mushrooms, okay, up in here,
yeah,
making mushrooms. She is planting things.
Yeah. Yeah,
trying to microdose your ass back to health.
Yeah, 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 yes, yes.
An MVP.
Yeah,
the MVP,
yeah,
of my recovery is so funny.
Yeah, so I didn't want to discount it by saying my girlfriend, and mm-hmm. and also I'm I guess I was 48 at the time. I'm 50 now. To have a girlfriend, it to use the word girlfriend, it just seems silly.
Okay, this feels right. I feel like we have a really good backstory, Andy, to go off of.
Yes.
And now I'm ready to help answer people's questions.
All right, we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back with your advice questions.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems, too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and, of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Dear listeners, Andy here doing the ad read again, and today we're talking about MeUndies. As the male half of couples therapy, I was asked to do this one because we're talking about boxers, which, and I hope I'm not breaking any confidences, Naomi does not wear. Now, if you're a podcast listener like me, you've heard plenty of ads for MeUndies, and frankly, I had always thought, it's underwear. How special can it be? And then I tried them, and friends, it is like wearing magic. It is like wearing a dream. It is so soft, there is nothing earthly I can compare it to. I am embarrassed. Absolutely embarrassed to say I'm middle-aged and just finding this out, but the material your underwear is made out of really does make a difference. I won't say where I usually get my boxers from, but for comparison, MeUndies are like wearing a cloud covered in angel's feathers, and the other ones I wear are like wearing a bear trap smothered in puke. MeUndies got style for everyone, from all black classics to fun expressive prints in sizes extra small to 4XL. And they use sustainably sourced materials and work with partners that actually care for their workers. Also, I gotta point this out, there is a particular technology that the folks at MeUndies would like me to discuss. Now, you know Naomi is sex negative and I am sex neutral, so I didn't want to have to say what this technology is, so I asked friend of the show, friend in real life, Mort Burke, to say the phrase. So, okay, here it goes. For any listeners with penises and testicles, I can say medical words. You might be interested in MeUndies' sophisticated
contoured pouch and ball caddy.
What's that again, Mort? They're incredibly comfortable?
Contoured pouch and ball caddy.
Wonderful. Thanks, buddy. Okay, soft underwear comes in all packages at MeUndies. So to get 20% off your first order plus free shipping, go to MeUndies.com/therapy. That's MeUndies.com/therapy for 20% off plus free shipping. MeUndies, comfort from the outside in.
Can we take a minute and talk about Skims? Now, you know I'm a recent Skims convert, having tried their underwear in the last few months, and I am now living lifted, supported, changed. So I decided to keep trying new stuff. And let me tell you, Skims basics and foundations are where it's at. Yes, I recently got the Soft Smoothing Seamless t-shirt. And y'all, it is so comfortable. It's been the perfect layer for me. I'm rocking it under a cardigan or a sweater when I want to keep it fitted and fabulous and not look all bulky. I mean, y'all know I'm back to work. Hashtag blessings. And I'm definitely that girl who is always cold in the office, okay? I need my layers, but I'm still trying to look put together. And the soft, smoothing, seamless shirt is helping me get it right. And I also got the boyfriend t-shirt in Heather Gray, and it is so friggin' soft and comfortable, and it's giving casual but intentional when I wear it with a pair of jeans. I'm feeling very good in it. So if you want to give these and other basics a try, shop the Skims t-shirt shop at skims.com. Now available in sizes extra, extra small through 4X. Thank you for the range, Skims. If you haven't yet, be sure to let them know we sent you. After you place your order, select podcast in the survey and select our show in the drop-down menu that follows. Again, that's skims.com. Go check out everything they've got and the new t-shirt shop. Hey, y'all. Wanted to pop in real quick and let you know that if you like what you hear and you want to support the show, there are a couple different ways.
Most of our support comes from our wonderful Patreon community. For $5 a month, you get 2 bonus episodes of just us mostly spilling the tea and occasionally searching for crazy bread in Los Angeles, plus lots of other bonus content. We love our page pals, and we couldn't do this without you. And if you want to join, go to patreon.com/couplestherapypod.
We also have merch, which includes Gotta Miss a Bitch and Jubu t-shirts, yeah, which you can find in the link tree in our Twitter or Insta bios.
And for absolutely $0, you can rate and review the show on Apple.
5 stars, please. It'll only take 10 seconds, and it helps us tremendously. Okay, that's it. We love you deeply. Now back to the show. And we're back with GG the OG, Gary Goldman, coming through. Okay? And we've got some listeners who have written in, called in, and they've got some questions, and we're going to keep our hearts open. We're going to create a non-judgmental space, but we want them to achieve their best. Okay, Gary?
Yes.
We have to really get in here and give them. Okay, so you ready for the first one? It's a voicemail, Gare.
Yes. I always like to start out with something that's a little bit of a softball. This is a voicemail about a spider.
Hi, Andy and Naomi and possibly guest. My name is Jennifer, and I have a non-relationship question for you. So I have a lovely patio. I live in a one-bedroom apartment with my husband. We have a really, really cute patio.
Patio brag.
And during quarantine, I basically remodeled it. I got new furniture. I got some lovely plants. I really got it very nice, like another room. But unfortunately, I saw a wolf spider out there about a month or two ago, the biggest spider I've ever seen in my life, and I decided to never, ever go back out there again. Obviously, I don't love this idea because I do really like my patio, and I miss sitting out there, but I'm scared. By the way, I do have anxiety disorder and possibly OCD, as per my therapist. So what is some advice you have for me? I really appreciate any help I can get. Thank you so much, and thank you for the show. I love it so much. Bye.
Okay, so spider on the patio. Now, I think the bigger concern, of course, is the anxiety issues. All of us, I'm going to put this on you, Gary. I'm just going to say all of us anxiety problems.
Well, anxiety, yes, and depression is a lovely two-hander, you know? So it's got to go together.
Yes.
So the thing is, though, I do relate to this, though, because I hate bugs. And like, do you remember there was like a big cockroach in our kitchen, and I literally would not go into the kitchen until I saw it dead. You know what I mean? Like, I need to,
yeah,
see that it's gone. So I understand. It sounds silly, but I fully understand what she is saying when it comes to giant insects.
Yes.
Yeah.
Are there, Gary, was there any, have you ever had a, it doesn't have to be an insect, but any kind of like, small thing that you're like, I'm done with X, Y, or Z.
Yeah.
Well, I can't think of one, but I totally understand avoiding something you love because of an anxiety over the space or the. So I completely understand that, and it's sad because she loves that patio. And so I wonder what the therapist says regarding, is it called exposure therapy or something like that? I wonder if that would be helpful or some sort of cognitive behavioral therapy, because I think that there is a compromise here where she gets to use her patio, and maybe her husband can provide some sort of protection or something like that. I know I'm trying to give answers and solve, but I think there are a number of angles to attack this at and approach it, and I also think that when you build up something, whether it be I haven't been to the gym in 6 months, it's that first one. It's that first trip to the gym that's the hardest, and then afterwards you're like, oh, they didn't mock me. I didn't break when I got there. I still remembered how to do the moves, and now I have one in a row, and I can build on that. And so maybe it's just a matter of a couple of minutes on the patio and easing into it. I always think that it's even when I first started doing stand up, it was 2 years of wanting to do stand up, and then one night of watching people do an open mic that was the real difference. And I could have gone to that open mic at any point, but it was just that one night that made it seem reasonable.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh God, that is so familiar to me. About all the time, like, there's so much stuff that I procrastinate on because it is that inertia, that initial kind of jump.
Yes.
That it just takes so much energy. A lot of it's just like, I mean, dumb shit, like like answering emails that I don't want to answer, yes. Like someone asking us for something, and I'm like, I just don't want to say no. Saying no to someone just feels so terrible to me, and I just hold off on those emails until, in my mind, they become it's been so long that I no longer have to answer the email because it's been the annals of time have swallowed them up, and it's no longer. And I'm like, I'm trying to get better about this stuff, but like, it's the same thing with this spider. It's like, it's the fear of it or the anxiety about just walking, taking a step over the threshold into the patio is so overwhelming.
Yeah.
What'd you say?
The emotional patio. You know, yes. This is a metaphor. This is a metaphor, honey. Yes. It's not a patio. It's not a spider. It's your mind. And I think, well, it's also because, right, spiders are nocturnal, right? So isn't it safe to say you could be in the patio?
Girl, they're everything.
You could be in the patio during the day, like short, like say, okay, I'm going to do half an hour. And if I don't see it, I'll stay for another 10 minutes. You know what I mean? Like you can just give yourself those increments.
Say 2 minutes. I'll give myself 2 minutes, and if I can get through two, I'll try for five. But this reminds me, because I wanted to tell the story of the night we met, Naomi, where I went to the was it the King's Theater in Brooklyn?
So we did
Two Dope Queens, and at the time I was just emerging from the worst of my depression.
Okay.
And so I was still shaky. And I was trying to sort of, this was my first TV appearance in over a year, and it was accepting an offer that I 2 months before I would have said, no way, I can't do it. And I was just on the cusp of being like, yeah, let's give it a shot. And I remember, I think you went on before me. And I watched you, and I remember thinking, well, you haven't been on stage for 3 months. Of course comedy has passed you by. And it's at a new level now, and it's more personal, and it's more honest, and you're and they're going to, I mean, it's an encapsulation of just about every pre-show jitters, but that one was particularly strong because I hadn't been on stage and I hadn't done a TV appearance in so long, and I remember just thinking, it's okay if you if you bomb, it's how you handle the bomb. And luckily, the audience
did not bomb at all. There was nothing about that. I mean, now knowing you said you hadn't been on, you hadn't been doing. Right, you said you hadn't been on stage in a couple months or whatever.
Yeah,
you would
have
never known that from the way you didn't. I mean, again, you've been doing it long enough, right? So it's not like it would be visible. But I'm very surprised to hear that, given, like, I remember thinking, like, this is just, like, so tight and so pop. I was like, he's like a professional. Like, you know what I mean? Like, but, a professional.
Yeah.
Like, here are my jokes, and they are written, and they are funny, and you are going to go on a ride. Because you have that, like, that comfort. I feel like sometimes I talk really fast, and I will, like, kind of really yell. And I realize I do that more when I don't think they like me, or I don't trust the audience. You know, the real stuff is, like, when you can fucking take your time and go, okay, I got you. We doing this. And I felt very, like, we're in the arms of an angel.
Taken care of.
I felt like I was taken care of. I was in the arms of an angel.
Thank you. I never thought you went too fast. If anything, I thought that your pacing was right on the money, because that's something I always notice in people that are, when they do go too fast, I'm like, oh, this person needs to have more confidence in what they're doing. And I never thought for a moment that you weren't confident. But what I'm saying is that everything going into that night was all about the anxiety of the first time in a long time. And that's like Andy said, the inertia is so powerful. Mm-hmm. And I know just with the pandemic, I haven't been on stage. And last weekend I went to a show to watch a show, and I was like, oh, okay, I can do this. But I needed to see somebody else doing it before I felt like I could do it. So I accepted a show later in October, and I'm sure I'm sure the day of I'll be a wreck, but I at least know that it's coming, and I can prepare myself, and also literally prepare myself, which is the way I fight a lot of anxiety, which is just to be over prepared and concentrate on that, so I won't feel guilty. But I think that Jennifer with her husband can navigate this, and he can scout the area, and I don't know how they feel about bug spray, but he can bring that in hand, and maybe that will make her feel more secure. And all she has to do it for is one or 2 minutes, and those will be the hardest 2 minutes. I think everything after that will be easier. And we don't go out there and fall asleep, take a nap, but sit out there, be aware, and ease into it.
That's my advice. Yeah, I was going to say, if there's, I was in my mind, I was calling it a scientific talisman, right? Ooh. So I don't think just like getting a some kind of like crystal is going to help, right? I mean, if it does, it does. But like, I meant like something like a bug spray or something like that. Look, I don't, as someone who doesn't like to kill insects or animals, right? I say learn to survive. But if you need it, like for Naomi, she needs dead bugs. And so I kill bugs for her.
Well, you also take them outside, and I say not far enough.
Some of them. I killed that roach dead.
Yeah. But then spiders, you like to, like, let them live.
Some. What's that? Anything that looks too close to a brown recluse, I kill. If it looks like a brown recluse, I'm not risking the lives of my wife and 3 pets. Because I wanted to let a little critter live,
right.
All right? So
right.
There's a limit for
okay,
me.
Okay, good.
All right?
Good.
I kill ants. I kill cockroaches. What do you want from me? That's what I'm saying. But if you are comfortable with murdering these things, get this.
Get ready. Yeah, have your
To me, like, that's kind of what I call a scientific talisman, this bug spray. It you know that there is a reaction that will kill this thing. Spray it around.
Yeah.
Right,
and then
right.
See if that lessens your anxiety.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's get into the next one.
Yeah, why don't we do one more? All right, this is I believe it's a DM on Instagram. This comes to us from the middle of August. Remember those days? Remember those light days, the middle of August, when we had so much hope in our eyes? So this is Angela. She says, Hey, Naomi and Andy, love you both and the pod.
Bless.
I just started therapy this year, back in June, and I know I've had depressive tendencies, abandonment issues, and a few other things. The thing is, I know my shit, and I'm just looking for ways to deal, and I'm pretty good at focusing on the good things / busying myself versus focusing on the stuff I need to be doing. Right? Anyway, I had a conversation with my white woman therapist, my second through BetterHelp, which is a company that does not sponsor us, I would like to point out. So, we all are on the same page. I had a conversation with my white woman therapist about things, and she asked how else she can help me because she kind of made it seem like I'm fine and just a perfectionist. Parentheses, full disclosure, I'm an Asian woman. And I think her lack of understanding contributes to this, and I told her I do feel shitty about things, and sometimes I only share the good, and she took the feedback well. My question is, should I try to find another therapist? I just feel like she's taking me as far as she can, and I realized I don't like people who are too familiar with things I like / do, and she shared a lot about her personal life, so it's like, okay. And she's around my age, early 30s, but she kind of has the same issue the first therapist I had has, which I immediately eliminated after seeing her grainy picture. Like, it seems like she's barely holding things together herself. And I think I need more of an aspirational type of doctor of color to chat with. Thoughts? Question mark. Thoughts. Okay, so I think I want to put this to both you, Naomi, and you, Gary. Two things going on here, I think. Yeah. One, is there a problem with the therapist being a white woman? Mm-hmm. And second, is there a problem with the therapist having her own issues, which she doesn't seem to have good boundaries with? And have you both had these kinds of issues with your therapists? Gary, you first.
I have been so fortunate with therapists over the years. The first therapist I ever had was during summer training camp in college for football, and we were together as a therapy battery for like eight to 10 years, like from 89 to 99, I saw him.
Wow.
And with maybe a year off in between somewhere where I went crazy. But I was really lucky with that one. And then I found a great one in Los Angeles. And then,
okay, you got to give me that name after the show. Okay, I'm gonna need that.
I don't know if he's still practicing. His name was John Reynolds, and I've actually tried to reach out to him over the years, and I can't find him. But he was terrific. And then I found a great one in New York City. Who it would be very unlikely that you don't have a friend who's gone to see this guy. His name is Alan Lefkowitz, because he treats so many comedians in New York City, it's laughable. But he's just so great, and it's so helpful to have that shorthand where you don't have to tell him how competitive so and so is, because because the last three people who have come into the office have brought that person up. So I think one thing that I think that I've always been looking for in a therapist is in a really wise father. So that's part of it for me. I know it is. I don't think it's a coincidence that I had a divorced parents, and I think I was always looking for father figures. So I think this is part of that. So that's. I don't know if it's important to me, but it's what I've been attracted to in a therapist. But I always wonder whether it's better to have somebody of the same gender or a different gender and the same. I think it was helpful that I didn't have a Jewish therapist the first time around, because I was so convinced that Jewishness was a separate mindset, and that it was that sort of there's sort of a striving amongst Jews of my generation and their parents to please their parents. Uh-huh. And to have a perspective outside of that world. And I'm sure most therapists would understand that pleasing your parents is this fool's errand, but it was It was good. It was good to hear this from what I considered an objective non-Jewish person. I'm certain that any Jewish therapist would be sharp enough to dispel a lot of these myths associated with being a son or daughter. But it was really helpful to have that perspective and be able to understand that. So that was important to me. But this let's also acknowledge what a fantastic DM that is. I mean, this person was funny and on point and probably instinctually knows what she needs. And And so maybe her gut will tell her, and it doesn't sound. It sounds like she says, "I don't want to go to this person anymore. This person is not the right. Is not the right fit." And but again, with inertia, it's so much easier to stay with a mediocre therapist than it is to tell everybody about the thing that made you in 11th grade.
Right. Oh, it's so God. True. Yeah. I felt that way. I mean, like, that's part of why I think I haven't started someone new out here, or like I did, but like it took me so long to start someone new.
Right.
Because I was just like, okay, I went to white schools. Can we just kind of get to it? You know what I mean? Like, it's like to have to start that over when it felt like, but I will say this though, like, I do, like, there were some, you know, I used to love a white lady therapist. I was like, give me more. Because I think I was at a point, now I think I would say differently. Before, I felt like any older black woman was my mom, but that wasn't good. Like, I would need that person to kind of approve of me too much, or I would really, and I knew, I was like, I don't want that. So I know if I talk to like an older white woman, we're not going to have that dynamic, but she's still like older and knows stuff. But now, where I'm at now, I feel like I need actually more. What I need more is like more black, like a black woman who has dealt with white spaces, which probably any black therapist has.
Right.
And so
right.
Just like, I'm like, now I know that's what I need now.
Yes.
But I know that like in my 20s, and I was like, nah, I'm not going to be honest with this person. Like, I know if it's an older black woman, I'm not going to tell her about like the hookup or thing I did. I just knew I wouldn't be able to.
Because you were worried she would be as disapproving as your mom.
Or I would just look at her that way. Like, I would just want her to like me.
Be your mom. Yeah. In the same way that, like, Gary, you were looking for a wise father figure.
Yeah.
You were looking for someone who was like your mom, but opposite. You wanted your mom, but her approval matrix was shifted so that she approved of you.
A shifted approval matrix. Exactly. But it is important. I think sometimes there's, you know, we can't, and now I ask people too, like, I started seeing this woman and she's Hispanic, and she was like, and I asked her, like, do you have a lot of clients of color, right? So in the same way, it's like, oh, the person who knows comics knows all this other stuff backstory-wise. Is somebody who's like, are we going to be having this conversation for the first time, and you're going to have to, like, secretly between sessions read a book, or do you actually know what's up? And so I asked her that, but I think it is, like, you can't, you know, you don't, sometimes you want to say, like, the human condition is the human condition. So I should be able to see anybody.
No,
but
we know that's not true.
Well, exactly. Like, culture and how you were raised does influence a lot of how you see the world. And somebody, even if they're not that culture, but if they're familiar with it enough or have enough, like, that does make a difference. Because, you know, I think I do, even like when I talk about my mother, right? A lot of that conversation has to do with, like, just the generations. Like, she grew up, it was like, if you were, like, to be a black person and to kind of make it to the top, you had to behave in a certain way. You had to mind your P's and Q's. You got to keep it together. Don't walk outside with your elbows ashy. Like, you just had to have it together in a way that, I think a lot of my comedy is almost a reaction to that. Like, I talk about, like, feeling fat and what I ate and all these things that are supposed to be shameful kind of as a reaction to being taught to be pretty much ashamed of everything.
Mm.
But it helps to have a therapist. Like, I was talking to a therapist who was like, that's because your mother came up in X time when this is what that meant. Like, I needed to hear that from somebody else.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
You need a therapist that recognizes race, class, gender, sexual, an intersectional therapist.
Honey, intersectional therapy. Yes.
That it is different. That generate, like, me and these generational differences, it is different. Like, it changes your conceptual apparatus of how you understand the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. My mom is, like, very, like, Because remember, I used to do this joke a long time ago that was like, it was just a line. I used to drink to feel pretty. Now I eat to feel nothing. And my mom hated it. Like, she came the first time she saw it, she was like, Naomi, why do you say that? And it's like, it gets a laugh every time. It's a no-brainer. But for her, yeah. It's like, don't tell people something like that. Why would you say something like that out loud? And then for her, she's like, was I a bad mother? You see what I'm saying? Like, it's that thing.
Yeah.
And realizing, like, and of course it hit me when she said that. I was like, oh my God, am I terrible? But I was like, it's because, like, she grew up in a time, you don't do that. You know, it's
right.
The kind of stuff you don't say outside of your house.
Yeah.
It's very much like, don't put that out there. And I love putting it out there.
Right. You should just do jokes about meeting Obama.
Exactly. Just jokes about meeting Obama and how soft his hand was.
Oh.
But, yeah.
But, yeah. So, okay. So, follow your instincts.
Angela, follow your gut. You know what you need.
You know what you need. Right, whether it's a wise father figure or an opposite black mama, you know what you need.
Yeah, you need someone who can kind of get that. Or at least you need to try it, right? And then you can kind of realize, oh, okay, maybe I was just blaming everything on them not being Asian, and then really it was because they weren't a good therapist.
Right. Ideally, you need a woman of color who has her shit together.
Don't we all? That's like a fact. Gary's got one. But Tito's.
Yeah.
This was a fun time, Gary. Thanks for talking to us.
Yeah, Gary.
Oh, thanks so much. I'm so honored to be included, and I hope the four of us will be able to get together and hang out and spill tea.
Oh my God, I would live. I would love.
Yeah.
That would be so good.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
All right.
We're compelling.
Thank you. And I'm so grateful we were able to get this done.
We did it.
Yeah.
We did
through
it.
All the technical difficulties. And we'll see you all next time.
Bye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.